Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radio Lab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radio Lab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Something unusual and maybe important happened yesterday at the Conservative Political Action Conference in Washington. Steve Bannon, President Trump's chief strategist and apparent ideological compass, spoke publicly at the conference and was very direct about the guiding principles for the Trump administration. Here's the 30-second heart of that clip.
You know, I've said that there's a new political order that's being formed out of this, and it's still being formed. But if you look at the wide degree of opinions in this room, whether you're a populist, whether you're a limited government conservative, whether you're a libertarian, whether you're an economic nationalist, we have wide and sometimes divergent opinions. But I think the center core of what we believe, that we're a nation with an economy, not an economy just in some global marketplace with open borders, but we are a nation with a culture and a reason for being.
Steve Bannon at CPAC. We'll get a take on what Bannon and CPAC might reveal about what this administration and the 2017 conservative movement are really about at their core from a prominent conservative writer for National Review who has been a Donald Trump skeptic. David French is a Harvard-trained lawyer, a veteran of the Iraq War, where he earned a Bronze Star. He's still in the Army Reserves. He's a Christian conservative, lives in a small town in Tennessee, is married to the author Nancy French. He does write supportively about some Trump policies. And some of you may know that the anti-Trump conservative William Kristol, editor of the Weekly Standard, was promoting the idea of David French as an alternative presidential candidate, which French considered but ultimately decided against. David, thanks very much for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Can you give our listeners some background on what makes you a conservative and what has made you a skeptic of Trump?
Well, I like to describe myself as a constitutional conservative. I believe in that the government is confined and limited and designed from its inception in this country to defend the fundamental liberties of its citizens. And the thing that concerned me about Donald Trump is I just did not feel like he had any conception of the government essentially conforming to its constitutional role. And rather than he saw the government as an extension of his own will and his own power, I saw Trumpism not as a coherent ideology, but rather the ambition of one man, a man who would adopt positions you liked only to the extent that they would advance his interest and abandon those positions the instant that they didn't serve his interest anymore. So I didn't see him as a constitutional conservative in any way, shape, or form.
Steve Bannon certainly has a coherent ideology. And on the clip we just played, what do you think he meant by a nation with a culture and a reason for being? And is it the same thing that you, as a never-Trump conservative during the campaign, as a constitutional conservative, however you want to define yourself, might mean if you talked about a nation with a culture and a reason for being?
Yeah, I think we're talking about different things, although a lot of what he said, I found it to be kind of pablum and strawmanism. I don't think that there's anyone who says that our nation doesn't have a culture. I don't think there's anyone who says our nation doesn't have a reason for being. The question is, what is the culture and what is the reason for being? And I would say that what makes our nation unique, what the heart of American exceptionalism, is the notion of America as a nation that is founded through a constitutional government that is centered around the protection of the individual liberty of its citizens, and that is something very different from sort of the blood and soil nationalism you've sometimes seen in Europe and other places around the world. And it's one of the reasons why we have been able to integrate and assimilate so many different cultures into this country, because we're united behind a common idea. And that's the thing that I'm concerned that Bannon is missing, although honestly, he's not really articulated what he really means at length.
Well, what people of color and white progressive generally take Bannon to mean is that he's really a white and Christian cultural nationalist, that he thinks white and Christian culture are superior to others. And so you have Trump promising in his campaign speeches three big things: to punish companies that move jobs overseas, that's purely economic, but also to create a deportation force and impose a total Muslim entry ban, even though, you know, the policies, when they flesh them out, don't exactly say that. So it gives so many people of color and white progressive chills when they hear Bannon yesterday say things like this. Here's another 25-second clip.
President Trump, when he was running, he made a – and this is the other thing that the mainstream media or opposition party never caught, is that if you want to see the Trump agenda, it's very simple. It was all in the speeches. He went around to these rallies, but those speeches had tremendous amount of content in them, right? I happen to believe, and I think many others do, he's probably the greatest public speaker in those large arenas since William Jennings Bryan. This was galvanized.
It was all in the speeches. So, David French, what's your reaction as a conservative, knowing what Trump actually said in his speeches and hearing Bannon say, even as they're trying to put softer edges on the policies in writing, hear Bannon say it's all in the speeches and he's resisting pressure to moderate?
Yeah, you know, I it's hard for me to take that really seriously, considering that the actual policy initiatives since he's become president are so dramatically different from so many of the things that he said in his speeches. I think one of the cores of Bannonism is that you will say what you need to say and do what you need to do to win. I think that that was the influence of Bannonism on this president. I don't think it is ideologically coherent. I mean, so here you have a president who promises an absolute and total Muslim ban and then delivers a incompetently implemented order that's a 90-day pause on entry from seven countries. I mean, so the idea that it was all in his speeches, in fact, it wasn't all in his speeches. And I think one of the things that this administration is going to have to understand and realize is that, you know, the speeches won't matter that much anymore. The speeches are going to matter an awful lot less than what this president actually does. And listening to Bannon yesterday, I just found it to be largely incoherent. He said things that were calculated to get his base to like him and calculated to get his opposition to hate him, but there wasn't much there.
On the cultural nationalism, the alt-right white supremacist leader Richard Spencer went to CPAC. You probably saw this coverage. And when they realized who he was, then they revoked his credential. But he's a vocal Trump supporter. He thinks they're on similar campaigns. And then Spencer spoke to reporters, and he used, in a way, very similar words to Bannon. He says, "I'm about protecting our culture." So how different is that from what Steve Bannon said, using almost the same words? "I care about defending a culture," were Spencer's words, and you heard the clip from Bannon.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They kicked Spencer out of the conference. CPAC disinvited Milo. You're not going to hear Steve Bannon talk much about the alt-right going forward, although in the actual election campaign, he bragged that he had helped turn Breitbart into a platform for the alt-right. I think that what you saw happen during the campaign was this reprehensible action where people who were on the Trump train, so to speak, weaponized this incredibly hateful movement, this alt-right movement, weaponized them, in some cases defended them even when they unleashed incredibly vile anti-Semitic and racist attacks on Trump critics. And now they're all inconvenient for Trump. They are a problem for Trump. And so you've seen not only Milo losing his job at Breitbart, losing his book deal, you're seeing reports. I saw one just a couple of days ago where Breitbart is trying to move more mainstream. They weaponized this incredibly reprehensible movement. But the problem is you can't use them and then discard them so readily or so easily. There are too many people with long enough memory to know that, in fact, that Bannon explicitly tied himself to this or to this sort of amorphous online entity out there that is thoroughly hateful. And that's something that causes Americans, I think, to be rightly concerned about him. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't think a man who associated himself so proudly with the alt-right belongs within 50 miles of the Oval Office, much less a couple of doors down.
And how much more broad is it than Bannon? I know you got to go in a minute, but you mentioned the alt-right provocateur, Milo Yiannopoulos, who was going to be the keynote speaker at CPAC until he got canceled for saying good things about adults having sex with minors. He had already been banned from Twitter for encouraging people to harass the actress Leslie Jones. And I see you wrote an article in National Review chronicling some of Milo's anti-Semitic speech and denouncing CPAC for making him the poster boy for conservative free speech in the first place. So what is the conservative movement's embrace of Milo on everything but statutory rape tell you?
Well, it's deeply disappointing. I mean, I think it's a misapplication of this principle that says the enemy of my enemy is my friend. I mean, I've seen, you know, Milo YouTubes forwarded around and, you know, with titles like "Watch Milo Destroy This Feminist" or "Watch Milo Take On This Social Justice Warrior." Well, people watch this like really clever guy with a British accent take on hard leftists that they don't like, and they don't understand the fullness of who Milo is and what Milo has defended in his public career. And so people adopted this, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and they made a grave mistake in allying with him. They're correcting that mistake, but it was deeply disappointing to that it took up to this point to do it, because let's not forget these YouTubes and this podcast where he defended and seemed to defend, although he denies it now vigorously, seemed to defend pedophilia. That was not a new podcast. I mean, this was something that had happened some time ago. So it looked more like Milo had become embarrassing and therefore he had to go, rather than Milo has to go out of principle. And that was discouraging.
David French from National Review and the National Review Institute, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.